From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
All right, we have a lot to discuss. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. And if you're smart enough to be watching on the app, if you're smart enough to be watching on Fox Nation, or if you're able to, I shouldn't say smart enough, you're able to see our brand new studio. Right now, we're going to end up putting graphics in it. We have seven flat screens, let alone the three I'm looking at right now. The studio is really fantastic. So hopefully it's another reason to watch and to listen. There's so many moving parts today, so much to go over. Bethany Mandel will be joining us, co-author of Stolen Youth and the co-founder of the Substack Write Books for Kids. And Jonathan Turley standing by. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Make no mistake, this is a ban. It's actually ironic because the freedom of expression on TikTok reflects the same American values that make the United States a beacon of freedom. Rest assured, we aren't going anywhere.
TikTok, the war begins. As the Chinese media monster fights for American presence, the hypocrisy of this administration as they sign the ban and yet use the app.
Number two.
Today was the first time I've actually been in the same room with Donald Trump. He is taller than you might expect and walks in a gait that is shufflier than you'd think, kind of a shuffly waddle. And he's definitely a scowler. I can also confirm that he has a strangely orange hue.
Who is that? Is that Rachel Maddow? Oh, Joy Reid. Trump trials on two fronts. The Supreme Court will hear arguments for presidential immunity. And day seven of the New York case, we're going to lay out the arguments and the stakes.
Number one.
This is obviously very highly organized. This is not spontaneous. There's a group that's organizing these around the country. If you look at a lot of the encampments, the tents are identical. Somebody bought them. Somebody put in an order for these. These are not just students showing up.
William Jacobson weighs in, a Cornell law professor. Unprecedented, unacceptable cesspool of students sitting in and taking over college campuses through this country, from the University of Texas, Austin to USC, now Princeton, Harvard, Columbia, NYU. Praised by Hamas and the Grand Ayatollah of Iran, the personification of evil. It's time for a crackdown. They'll do it in Texas. Will they have the intensity to do it here in New York? I doubt it. I mean, if you've seen some of these scenes, you're probably just as angry as I am. You see, first at Columbia, they decide, we want to divest you from Israel. We no longer want to care about revealing that we're anti-Semitic to the 4,000-plus Jewish students on the campus. We will threaten them. We will harass them to the point where management says, standing up for the Jewish students, says, hey, if you're Jewish, don't go to campus. It's a little dangerous. Are you insane? I just talked to a Columbia student. He's a senior. He's graduating in 3 weeks. And he says his parents, obviously Jewish, he's Jewish, and they can't believe they're paying $80,000. Literally, he says, I got no money at all. He got near perfect scores in his SATs and his GPA, top five in his class. And he's about to graduate, and he wants to go on to law school. And as he wants to finish up the next 3 weeks, he says, absolutely, I feel in danger, but I'm going to class anyway. And I said, can you do it on Zoom? He said, yeah, but I'm not doing it. They're not going to stop me from going to class. This is the money I'm paying for. So this is the chaos. So if I just thought it was Columbia, that's one thing. But how rude they treat Speaker Johnson. Speaker Johnson shows up to tell everybody we support the Jewish students there, and he gets shouted down. Listen to some of the chaos while he's speaking. Cut seven.
And today I'm here to proclaim to all those who gnash their teeth and demand to wipe the state of Israel off the map and attack our innocent Jewish students, this simple truth. Neither Israel nor these Jewish students on this campus will ever stand alone. Today, Hamas issued an endorsement statement of the protesters on this campus. They called them the future leaders of America. It is detestable. All of this has to be said because the cherished traditions of this university are being overtaken right now by radical and extreme ideologies.
Just remind me, if that ever happens, I'm sure it's going to happen to me, don't pause. Because one of the things that Speaker Johnson did great, kept his poise, but he paused. And when you pause, they get louder. So here's an example of what he had to deal with. The Speaker of the House, the disrespect at a college campus. You have a speaker there, and this is the way you're taught to act? Cut six.
Enjoy your free speech.
student organizers are part of a group called Jewish Voices for Peace.
Anti-Israel encampments are popping up at universities all across this country. The madness has to stop. The madness has to stop.
You know, you had Congressman D'Esposito there, Congressman Lowry there. They all calling for the president to step down. So I read the New York Times today. They had the account of what's been going on with the president. I'm thinking, where is she? Since she left Capitol Hill, I have not seen her. She essentially is getting harangued for bringing the cops on campus last Thursday. And she essentially says, I understand my decision exasperated the problem. So here I am thinking on the outside, this woman's got to get tougher. She's being harangued by, I didn't know this, they have a Senate, which consists of former students, donors, they say current students, and they're haranguing her. We'll censure her as late as tomorrow for calling on the campus last week. Really? So she gave 48 hours for them to continue to stay on campus. But in these tents, they have taken over the square where they harass and say vile things to Jewish students. And they threaten violence against them, too, which is enough, by the way, for the NYPD to go in there. But they're waiting to be invited again. So the people there say, we're not going anywhere in 48 hours. I don't know what you're talking about. They said, do us a favor. Wrap this up in 48 hours and make sure anybody on campus is a student. Now, people are posting things online. They're not students. They're adults. And I believe a lot of them are professors that are sitting up there. These are the professional demonstrators being paid to go to places like Princeton, Harvard, Emerson, MIT, University of Texas, Rice University. Listen to what they said. This is what they were chanting at the University of Texas, Austin. Cut five.
Peace go home!
I mean, pigs go home? Are you insane? I mean, at the worst of the George Floyd riots, I expect that horrible behavior. But at a demonstration for Palestinians and Hamas, the cops show up and you say, pigs go home? Are your parents proud of you at Austin? Thankfully, they came in hard. They came in with cops on horseback. They ripped up those tents. And you can go and say whatever you want. Cops are going to take control in Texas. The NYPD is dying to take control. Soon they'll have to take control, but they were surrounded at NYU. The police chief, I should add, too, got surrounded, had to be brought to safety. The NYPD police chief. Can you imagine that happened to Ray Kelly or Commissioner Bratton? You go to NYU, Washington Square Park, to help the administration there, and the students surround you and threaten you about, because you're arresting certain students who are acting out of control. They even know, and many of them can't even pick out Israel on a map. We'll talk about that. The President of the United States also, the President of the United States this morning at 6:30 in the morning, got up and met with Teamsters. It was a wild scene. We covered it live. MSNBC didn't. CNN, I evidently got to it late, where the president met with working class right in New York City and then went to the cameras. We have some of that. Busy morning. Then we got the president's trial. Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Case is grossly unfair, Sean, and that's going to come as a surprise to a lot of people, but I strongly believe that. What is happening right now to President Trump, and let me be clear, I disagree with President Trump on about 95% of the issues at a minimum. But one thing he and I agree on, and that is that the politicization of these cases, in this case in particular, is gross.
That was Michael Avenatti from prison on with Sean Hannity. And look, he has an axe to grind. The people that put him in jail targeted him. He talked about that. This guy's a despicable guy. We watched him on television. But for the most part, he's saying what he sees there legally. Take what you want. He thinks this is a joke. But he's not the only one. Jonathan Turley, who's not a fan of Michael Avenatti. Wasn't he your student, Jonathan?
He was indeed my student.
So did you say to yourself, this guy will end up in prison?
No, actually, he was a very talented student and did very well for a number of years as a litigator.
So he's in jail now, and he called into the show, and he feels he's saying a lot of the same things you have said. I don't even know how you're going to vote, but he's saying, I'm not voting for Trump, essentially, but don't agree with him on anything. But this is crazy. So we're 7 days in now, I guess, four of those days, we're picking a jury. And as far as what they're going for, if I was to pin you down and say, what's the prosecution strategy, what would you say?
Well, the prosecution strategy is rather curious because they seem to have left out a crime. They're proving a series of facts that are largely uncontested because all of these facts, like having a non-disclosure agreement, are not crimes. You're allowed to do that. And there's not even a crime that has been suggested under the federal election laws. The Justice Department rejected that. They did not charge on those crimes. And so instead, what they're doing is they're throwing up an affair, which you're starting with, that is not part of the indictment.
What's interesting is there were three stories that came out, one about Stormy Daniels, one about Karen McDougal, and one about a love child that the doorman had. And I think that the love child one that didn't exist, that didn't happen, tells the story. If you want to know why, politicians or people in the spotlight pay to get rid of a story or get rid of a person. That's how they do it. Because you could be extorted. If your reputation is everything and someone knows that, they could bring that forward. And next thing you know, you're fending off a story that didn't exist. And I thought the doorman story, to spike a story and pay somebody for something they really don't deserve a dollar for because the story is not real, tells the whole story of why a public figure would want to do what Trump did. Do you think that's a good example?
Yeah, I think that your point is a very good one. And, you know, the fact is you could disagree with any actions that David Pecker took, any actions that Trump took, but they're all lawful and they happen a great deal. People do kill stories. You had a married host of a leading television program. By the way, his contract allowed for the termination of that contract for scandal. And so there are lots of reasons why you want to kill as many of these stories as possible. But none of that matters. The only reason these misdemeanors under state law have been zapped back into life is because there's a claim that they were all committed to hide a crime. But it's not a crime. This is not a political contribution. And the judge is just letting this farce unfold in his courtroom. It seems like he's just going to let this trial continue to see if they can stumble on a crime.
But do you worry about an unsophisticated jury, even though there's two lawyers on it, so you can't label that, but the majority of an unsophisticated jury looking at this and saying, wow, hookers, affairs, love child, payments, he knew about it, didn't know about it. Do you worry about people not understanding what a crime is and what behavior, unsavory behavior is?
Well, I'm worried that they're going to do what Bragg hopes they do, and that they're not going to look beyond the identity of the defendant. And I'm always opposed to lawyers on a jury. I never think they help as a criminal defense attorney, because even though the jurors are told that they should not rely on the legal views of the jurors, they will do so. They will view their comments as being more informed as to what the law is. And this case is a legal absurdity. And so if those two lawyers go in and say, oh, no, this is perfectly valid, that may be enough to silence a lot of jurors.
So David Pecker's been a longtime friend of Donald Trump, and he was on the stand, and people were just using conjecture to say, it's got to kill Trump that Pecker's on there saying these negative things about him. David Pecker Trump was asked that this morning, a few hours ago. And he goes, no, David's a good friend. I thought he did great. How do you feel about that? I don't know if we've gotten the transcripts yet, but from what he said, does it look like there's a breach of friendship? Does it look like he's become state's witness?
Well, you know, I think that he's being asked to prove things that are not being contested. I don't think he so far has viewed as particularly antagonistic, but they don't need him to be that way. They're just going to use this affair and paint Trump as being lascivious and litigious and paying people to kill stories. And the question is going to be, how is the judge in the end going to instruct this jury? I mean, at some point, are you actually going to say, to the jury, by the way, none of this is a crime. I mean, then why have we been doing this?
Right. But that's what the defense's job to do. Say, yeah, okay, whatever you just said, nothing's illegal. So if I look at the rest of the witness list, potential witness list, I see Hope Hicks, who's been by president's side when he was with The Apprentice through on and off through the administration. I see Kellyanne Conway, hired to take over for Paul Manafort. So there during the most tumultuous times through the 4 years, I see a potential potential witness in Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. When I put up that roster, and if I'm in your class, I say, what's happening here? What's the prosecution assembling? Which I can imagine might be in your class. What do you think they're doing? I know what everything you said, and it's well taken, and obviously I agree with it. But let's just look, just play it out.
Well, I mean, the question is, what's happening in Manhattan should not happen in any courtroom. And the creative arguments being made, if made in my class, I would tell the student, you're trying too hard. You're letting the identity of the defendant warp your legal judgment. And more importantly, you're trying to use the legal system to achieve what you want to be the end of justice. And you're ignoring the means of justice. And here, the New York courts seem happy or content to create a criminal code just for Donald Trump. And it's an embarrassment.
So the Supreme
for the New York bar, it's an embarrassment for the courts.
The president wants to be there, but he can't. The Supreme Court's going to have arguments on presidential immunity. Can you give our audience a quick look at what are some of the things we should be looking for in the arguments, and what do we think? What are the options on the agreement on the ruling?
I could tell you. Unfortunately, I've got to hop back on live for the TV, but I could tell you that the best lawyer today for Donald Trump in the Supreme Court will be Alvin Bragg, because playing out in Manhattan is exactly why presidents are claiming they need immunity. And I think these judges may not embrace the sweeping arguments of Donald Trump, but I think they're going to be as uncomfortable with the sweeping arguments of the lower court, and they may seek a middle ground. And if they do that, then they're going to have to remand this case, and then Smith is not going to see a trial before the election.
All right. I know you got to hop on TV. I know that's stressful because Donald Trump could be wrapping up any second. Then they're going to go back to the grids. And Jonathan Turley needs to be staring straight ahead. Am I correct?
That's exactly right. Thanks, Brian. You're
right.
One of the best.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Because we just had him on TV. We did the same thing. They just got to be ready. I always feel bad, Allison. So when I introduce three people, we got a reporter, McAdams. I got to go downtown here and go to the Supreme Court. Then I got to pick one. I always feel as though the other two are so let down because I can only go to one at a time.
Wait, they give you the power to pick them?
No.
I
know, but I it's in the prompter, but I always feel bad. McAdams, C.B. Cotton, Jonathan Turley. C.B. Cotton, there you go. Take it away. And I feel bad for the other two.
It's so funny you feel bad, though, because you're also all about the tease. So you're teasing that Turley's an after.
Are you saying I'm a good tease or a bad teaser?
No, you're an excellent teaser, but you like to tease. So I'm shocked you feel bad because you're making the audience stay longer to see Turley.
I will give you a mystery tease.
Okay.
What does the word pause mean? And should you say it out loud?
You'll hear that next.
Bring up the music. I'm done talking.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's very clear to me and to all the Jewish students on campus that what we're seeing isn't free speech. Freedom of speech does not include freedom to harass nor freedom to intimidate. My friends have been punched. My friends have been hit. My friends have been shoved. Flags have been set on fire on Columbia's campus. I mean, that is not what the First Amendment protects. And, you know, these protesters are calling for Tel Aviv to be burned to the ground, to bomb Tel Aviv. They're calling for an intifada revolution. And then in the same breath, calling for a ceasefire. And the hypocrisy is absolutely astounding.
That is a Columbia student, Edan Yadigard. And do you hear her description? Very similar to what I just had on television. I'm coming up from Fox and Friends. I just interviewed one senior student who told me that I'm graduating in 3 weeks. Yeah, I'm a little concerned for my safety. I'm going to school anyway. He's Jewish. He said the stuff that's been yelled at me over the last month, he goes, I knew there was an anti-Semitic feeling on campus, but nothing like this. And how is it? If I was just talking about Columbia, that's a big story, but I could probably name 40 schools, small schools like Emerson, big schools like the University of Texas, all having similar stories. Let's bring in Bethany Mandel, co-author of Stolen Youth and the co-founder of the Substack, Write Books for Kids. Bethany, when you hear these college students talk like Eden right there, what's your reaction?
So I actually know Eden, and I know a lot of other students like her, and I've been talking to countless students from across the country, from USC on the West Coast to NYU students and Columbia students, and it's incredible. Yesterday, I actually spoke to a student from Columbia University who served in the IDF as a medic, and he was in Syria helping Muslims who were victims of the civil war there. And he was in the middle of a war zone, and he was too afraid to do any media here because he was afraid for people at Columbia to know that he was Israeli and that he had served in the IDF, even though his service in the IDF was helping refugees from Syria. It's wild, the situation on campuses, and the fact that there, for every student like Eden, there's probably 100 more who are too afraid to go on TV, who are too afraid to tell their stories because they're just trying to keep their heads down and get their degree.
How did this happen? How did this happen when you have elite institutions? I mean, Harvard joined in, Princeton's going to join in today. Brown, there was 50. There was 50 students who were starting to put in tents there. We know about Emerson, MIT, University of Texas, Rice, USC. So this is just off the top of my head. With your studies, this doesn't surprise you as much as it does me, does it?
No. I mean, this was a lot of why Carol and I wrote Stolen Youth, because they have put every way to understand the world into an oppressor-oppressee framework. And they've decided that Israel are oppressors. But what's interesting about Princeton is that National Review leaked a document that the Students for Justice in Palestine, SJP, who, by the way, are terrorist sympathizers who have a presence on almost every American college campus, they put together a document for students who were thinking about starting an encampment at Princeton. And in that document, it says it's unlikely that you will be expelled. That's why this is happening on college campuses, because they understand that there are no consequences. This is a problem, if you want to like zoom out for a second, of parenting of people of my generation. We stopped meting out consequences for children, and schools stopped giving out consequences, and colleges stopped giving out consequences. And now we have a generation of kids who understand that they can do whatever they want, and there will be no repercussions. And so we are watching those chickens come home to roost right now.
So here's an example of one of the leaders elected, and that's Ilhan Omar. Listen to her on campus after her daughter, if that was my kid, who embarrassed me to no end, who was banned from campus. Here is, and now she's treated as a rock star. Here's the cut 16.
I am incredibly moved by your courage and bravery as a student body. Follow your gut and know that what we are doing, the voices that we are raising to save lives in Gaza, is a just and righteous and morally correct.
Listen to that. Listen to that. That immigrant who should be so thankful to be in a democracy and not in Somalia fighting for her life, wants to make our country more like Gaza.
Yep. Yeah, and what's wild about that is that this, again, something we wrote about in Stolen Youth, this generation of folks in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s have decided to turn children and college students into their warriors, into the people who fight these battles. We're seeing these encampments on college campuses, and we're seeing walkouts in high schools here. But where are the adults? Like, they've decided that the college students and the high school students are the warriors for Gaza. Why don't these adults put their money where their mouth is and risk their lives and their livelihoods in order, if they think this cause is so righteous? But they're not. It's all about virtue signaling, and it's all about radicalizing a generation, and they're incredibly successful at doing so.
So, yeah, if you had some guts, do what a lot of Jewish students in America did, sign up for the IDF. But instead, you know what's gutsy? You go up to a pole with a hostage picture on it, you rip it down. You know what's gutsy? With a group of 10 people start screaming at Jewish kids because you see their yarmulke or Star of David. That's courage for them. That's what their parents are paying $70,000+ a year for. And that's what the, that's what that student told me today. I don't understand it. And how about this? At one point, do intelligent kids at 21 years old find out the Grand Ayatollah of Iran salutes them and the leadership of Hamas backs them and think to himself, you know what? I'm on the wrong side.
You'd think, right? You'd think. So it's funny. I was a super duper lefty protester when I was 17, 18 years old. And I vividly remember walking down Sixth Avenue, giving the middle finger to the Fox News building and beating on my bongo. This is what democracy looks like. And then I looked around and I saw people holding up anti-Semitic protesters. And me as a Jew was like, oh, I don't know if these are my people. And it made me sort of step back from that protest movement when I was 17, 18 years old protesting the Iraq War and think to myself, I don't know if this is my community. I don't know if this is my tribe. I don't feel comfortable with these people. I don't understand why that same retrospection can't happen for these, especially the Jewish students or the so-called Jewish students who are part of these encampments, because it's plain as day that there is a right and a wrong side here. And the people who walked into a kibbutz and beheaded a baby and raped a woman are the bad guys here.
If that was just it, that would be horrific. But it's over 1,200 and all died the most brutal way possible. So I just thought this was interesting. This emerged yesterday from Israel. One hostage, Hirsch, has his arm blown off during the raid, and evidently, thankfully, he is still alive. What did he do? He woke up. That's what he's guilty of. He woke up that day and was attacked and ambushed. So here's his dad commenting on his proof of life as he saw his gaunt son missing an arm. This is what he said, cut 27.
Message number one in general is 185 days. It's enough. Let's figure this out right now, today, get the right people in the room and not leave that room until we've got a solution that includes all 133 hostages coming out. What's happened in the last couple of weeks is we're starting to hear more conversations about the conflict and about the region that barely, if at all, include the hostages. And our point is no conversation should be had without the starting point being 133 hostages need to get out. Mm-hmm. Once that happens, pressure can be released in other parts of the region, but we must get those hostages out, and it's got to happen now.
And Bethany Mandel, do you realize what's helping keeping those hostages locked up? Hamas feels they got power. They feel like they're winning over Western Syria, and they're winning over the next generation of Americans, the number one ally of Israel. All of this empowers those terrorists.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we're also seeing a back and forth happening between Hamas and negotiators where they stand their ground and make absurd demands or just walk away from the negotiating table. And in return for that, them stonewalling these negotiations, the Biden administration puts more pressure on the Netanyahu government and Israel. And so the Hamas government has no reason to negotiate because every time they walk away from the table, they're not the ones feeling the pressure. Qatar are not the ones feeling the pressure. It's Israel that's feeling the pressure. And what's really heartbreaking about Hirsch Goldberg Polan, he was born in America, in California. And if you look at pictures of his bedroom, he believed in peace. He believed in coexistence. He lived in Jerusalem. He went to a party. And for that, you know, the video that Hamas released, the way that they translated his speech, it said, I was arrested at a rave. No, you weren't. He wasn't arrested at a rave, but that's how they see it. They see every single Israeli, and this is, by the way, a feeling that is shared by people on college campuses. They see every single Israeli as someone who is living on stolen land and a criminal.
They probably also feel that America is on stolen land.
Yes. That's why they do the land acknowledgments.
Right. So Alan Dershowitz, friend of Israel, Jewish professor, liberal, who's taught for years at Harvard, cut 26.
No, I can't support this party, and I have an open mind as to who I will vote for. But let me tell you that I think a lot of people are missing the point. This is a repetition of what happened in the 1970s. How do I know? I represented a lot of the radicals in the 1970s who were protesters. What happened to those protesters? Some of them became actual terrorists. The Weather Underground, people like Kathy Boudin and Bernadette Dorn, they blew up American institutions. They blew up recruitment centers and Bill Ayers and others. And I'm afraid that in the groups that are now yelling, we are Hamas, they will become Hamas when Hamas comes to this country. And it will, as it's coming to Europe.
Is his fear something you think about?
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, there was an expose that was recently posted by Gabby Deutsch, who works for Jewish Insider. And she had access to the NYU Telegram, where they were sharing information about the encampment. And the pinned post is a video of Hamas's military chief announcing the attack on 10/7 and calling for people to take up arms. This is at NYU. On their announcements at their encampment, they are praising Hamas. It's a straight line. And what's crazy is, like, people like AOC are saying, well, we're peacefully protesting. That's the line that we keep on being fed. These people are peaceful protesters. No, these are terrorist sympathizers, and they're not quiet about it.
Bethany, it's a maddening time, and I forgive you for giving us the finger.
You know, we can all change. We can all change, right?
You better not. Thank you. Congratulations on the book, Stolen Youth, the one person that in her studies realized where we were heading. And it is a bad situation right now with the next generation of Americans, some of them. Bethany Mandel, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, your turn next. 1-866-408-7669. You see these protests around the country. You see when the foot goes down, it works in Texas. At USC, they surrounded one of the cars and they forced the cops to give up one of the students they had arrested for using epithets and aggressively going at cops. They are outnumbered. They're called on late to these campuses. A lot of times the cops are getting overwhelmed by it, and they're not supported by the administration. They're called in way too late. And let me tell you, I will give you the details of the meetings with the Columbia president. You're not going to believe it. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I see an economy that grows from the middle out and the bottom up, where the wealthy pay their fair share, so we can have child care, paid leave, and so much more, and still reduce the federal deficit and increase economic growth. Folks, imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years.
So he's supposed to pause for four more years, and let everyone, he reads it right off the prompter. He doesn't feel any of it. It was a terrible delivery to begin with, and pause just knocks it out of the park.
It really did. And it was like the awkward pause. It was just, you know, everyone who's behind the camera is just like face palming.
Remember, it reminds me of the character Will Ferrell played, Anchorman.
That was fantastic.
Remember, he said, Ainsley reminded us, remember, he said there was a question mark after his name.
I was going to say, anything I could think about what they put in the prompter that was very funny, I shouldn't say on the air.
Right. But the one thing you do, you know, in the prompter, you're supposed to put brackets in. But he does not have the best people. I mean, my goodness, the way they leave him out there walking hundreds of yards with that shuffle, the way they put him by, they don't want him talking to press, but they walk by press, so he still has to, turns around and answer a question, gets himself in trouble again.
You don't think they had brackets around pause?
So you think it was him?
Totally. Oh, 100%. They probably put pause in some other font or italics or stars. They didn't have that normal. If they didn't, that would be on him.
Now, a lot of people think, well, everyone's entitled to one mistake. Although that's a huge mistake. Yeah. It shows you're not in the room. It shows you're not responding. And when you've got to hit four, you don't tell people four more years. It's like when Jeb Bush says, "Please clap."
Yeah.
Right. Pause.
Please clap. I know.
Here's more from Joe Biden at his best. I mean, at his worst. Cut 43.
Are you ready to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America. Elect me. I'm in the 21st century, not back then. You weren't even a state. Besides, I used to drive an 18-wheeler.
How hard is it, Eric, to just pick 13 seconds? That was 13 seconds. Is that the hardest decision in your life?
I have like 13 minutes of his gaffes.
And that was before he was president. Remember? I mean, we had so much Joe Biden. You can't go into a 7-Eleven without seeing someone with an Indian accent. I mean, those are like the good old days.
Obama being nice and articulate.
Right. He goes clean. He's clean, nice, articulate. That was day one after he declared he's running for president. He said all that. That was you're talking about a dream, man. It's just incredible. So this is the one thing. This is what's so interesting. We never had these trials before, or somebody to get off the campaign trail unless there was an illness. And I don't even remember somebody being ill or needing an operation. But the more Joe Biden goes, look at all the time I got on by myself in these battleground states. Yeah, every day you do something stupid. AOC, I learned a long time ago to listen to her. Really? The same one who said supports these violent protests, condemns the cops for coming on, the administration for inviting them. I learned a long time ago to listen to AOC, who said that they're all nonviolent, who is says that why don't we report that in Gaza they found Hamas people with their hands tied, buried in shallow graves, which is totally unsubstantiated, but brings that up. So just insane. And that's just it. So President Trump, on the other hand, gets up, if you missed it, 6:30 in the morning, the Teamsters got up, these builders that have worked with him before, probably 500, looks to me 500 people. So they're waiting behind barriers. He walks out. They start chanting Trump, Trump, Trump. And he shakes their hands, takes pictures, and even walks over to the press. That's how we got up today. At 6:30, he spends an hour with them, comes back and talks to the press again, then goes back to Trump Tower, and now he's in court hearing about a possible violation of the gag order. Do you know what he's putting out now? He's putting out fundraiser emails that say, I could be in jail. And technically, he could. They had a story yesterday, and ABC was running a story that the Secret Service had met with jail officials on how they would function in jail if Trump got put in there.
That's incredible. I mean, technically he could, but I mean,
you don't have to see it, right?
It would be very unprecedented, even like a bold move for this judge.
Right. So they're going to fine him maybe $5,000 or nothing. You see that Michael Cohen voluntarily said, I'm not going to do anything about the trial. I'm not going to tweet anything about the trial. On his own, he said.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. It's really all eyes on New York. It's unbelievable. Got NYU unrest like I've never seen before. Downtown New York, a court case with a former president we've never seen before. And the original point of the sit-ins for Hamas and the Palestinians that have overwhelmed in the previously prestigious college campus of Columbia, all upstate, all in uptown on the west side, New York. And it's emblematic of the dozens of other colleges around the country who are going to bat for the Palestinians and Hamas and going to the Yasser Arafat gift shop and getting all types of paraphernalia I haven't seen since the terrorist leader left this planet. Bottom of the hour, Speaker Mike Johnson's going to be talking to us after an important conversation he's had. And we know where he was yesterday, right at Columbia. And Mark Thiessen is standing by. We are also seeing that they're having the hearing already has taken place, according to the reports of people inside the courtroom. And they're about the president violating his gag order. We know he did. What's the fine going to be? Let's get to it. And then they're going to get back to the case of David Pecker and Karen McDougal. And then we're going to find out. We're also hearing arguments now. We'll pull back some of the important stuff of the immunity case. Does the president have immunity when you are president of the United States? The Supreme Court is hearing it. The results could have a lot to do with who the next president is. So let's get to Let's get right to Mark Thiessen, former chief presidential speechwriter for George W. Bush, Fox News contributor, Washington Post columnist, a fellow at AEI. Mark, welcome back.
I'm preempting the big three. Oh, my gosh.
I have to go right to you. I kind of just did it. Except for my other third one was TikTok, which I know you're passionate about, too. But that's how important you are, Mark.
Thank you. Well, I'm honored.
Although, you know what I found out yesterday? It's going to make you jealous. What? I outnumbered celebrated that 10-year anniversary, and I was the most used one lucky guy. It's a show that you also thrive on.
I'm on once a month. I come up to New York once a month to be on them, but, you know, of course.
You will never catch me.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I'm going to have to double my production.
All right. First things first. I know you appreciate this. When I thought that Trump was going to try to take advantage once he got out of court, I thought it would be after he got out of the courtroom. I didn't know it was going to be before. 6:30 in the morning, we find out he's meeting with Teamsters, about 500 of them, and right around the block from or close to where his tower is. And these guys loved him. And they had the hard hats on, and they talked afterwards. Did you see those optics?
I did see them. Yep. It was very impressive. It's an interesting strategic move on his part because, you know, he probably is not going to be able to compete in New York. But New York's been closer than a lot of people thought in recent elections. So it's not such a blue state that the Democrats can just ignore it and not spend money here. And the irony is that probably if he wasn't on trial here, he wouldn't be spending a lot of time campaigning in New York. But since they're forcing him to be in New York against his will, he might as well campaign here and draw fire from the Democrats over here. So they're going to have to, you know, if they keep him in New York in a courtroom, he's going to start campaigning in New York and having rallies in New York. And they're going to have to start diverting some resources to New York to defend it, because even if he doesn't win the state, he could generate enough votes to maybe win right. some congressional seats and complicate their ability to take back the House. So it's actually he's making a very smart three-dimensional chess play here.
Right. I think it would be great. The other thing would have been perfect, but it's almost too tough even for him to go up to Syracuse for the funeral of the cops that were slain.
Yeah,
up there, but he's trying to be in 10 places at once. So just quick thing. You saw yesterday the Speaker of the House took a risky move. He went down to Columbia and just showed support for the Jewish students. Listen to how he was greeted. Cut six.
Enjoy your free speech.
Some of the student organizers are part of the group called Jewish Voices for Peace.
Anti-Israel encampments are popping up at universities all across this country. The madness has to stop.
And he did have some time. He did have some time in which he got his words out, where he's calling on the president to step down in order to be restored on these campuses. You know who's missing? Chuck Schumer. You know who's missing? President Biden. What about some condemnation of the behavior and the salutations of Hamas should not be allowed in our country?
So first of all, can I just say that I love Mike Johnson?
Really?
This guy, it nice. Came out of nowhere. It was a backbencher, stepped into the breach when these knuckleheads deposed Kevin McCarthy, and has emerged in the last few months to be one of the most consequential speakers in the history of our country, quite literally. I mean, a few weeks ago, people were writing him off. You know, he can't get anything through the Congress. Everything's log jammed. He can't, you know, he's facing a revolt. They might depose him. Well, he kept the government funded. He passed aid to Taiwan, aid to Israel. He passed the FISA. He passed aid to Ukraine. He passed the TikTok ban. I mean, he is on a roll. And now he's outside of the steps of Columbia University, standing with the Jewish students who are facing daily intimidation from these pro-Hamas protesters. And it's not pro-Palestinian; they're pro-Hamas protesters. Let's call them what they are. And they heckled him. This guy is a Churchillian type figure. I've never been more bullish about the future of the Republican Party to see a leader like this emerge.
The only thing I would say, I would love to have gotten border security, and I asked him that, and I'm going to ask him again in a half hour. And one thing he said to me before this was signed is that Chuck Schumer won't budge on it. We put HR2 in front of him, he wouldn't do it, but you might have had leverage to get something. But I guess they want to do it separately. Your thoughts on that?
But can you imagine how effective Mike Johnson will be as a speaker if we have a Republican president, a Republican Senate, and an expanded majority in the House, where Marjorie Taylor Greene is sitting in the back bench where she belongs and everybody's ignoring her, and we actually have people who want to get stuff done? I mean, the things that he can accomplish getting through the House, if he's this effective with one hand tied behind his back by two hands tied behind his back, one tied by the Democrats in the Senate and the other tied by, attempted to tie by Marjorie Taylor Greene and some of these knuckleheads on the right. And he's getting so much stuff done. Imagine what he'd do with his hands freed and a Senate and a president willing to work with him and get stuff done.
I agree with you. In terms of what we're seeing on these college campuses, Mark, it's unprecedented. University of Texas. We watched the governor come out there and just get his put his cops on horses and just rip up those encampments. Not the story in NYU. Not the story. In fact, our police chief was harassed, and he had to be brought to safety. You saw what happened at USC, where they arrested one of the kids and they forced to let him out of the police car because the cops were surrounded. You see the unrest at Columbia. You see they're about to put their own tent city in Princeton and in Harvard. Can you put in perspective this terrorist-loving, Palestinian-sympathizing generation?
So here's the thing that is the most disturbing about Columbia is there's always, you know, crazy students who do stuff like that. What was most frustrating to me is watching hundreds of members of the faculty come out,
yes,
and march in support with them, and actually lock arms and surround the encampment to keep journalists from coming in to film them. I mean, why on earth would anyone send their children to Columbia to be taught by these people? You know, not only would I not let these people anywhere near my children, I certainly wouldn't pay $500,000 over 4 years to pay for the privilege. Why would anyone send their kids to these schools? You know,
I know.
It's just remarkable. It's not just the kids; it's the faculty. There's such a fit. And as far as President Biden is concerned, you know that you know the other day he comes out and says, you know, well, I condemn the anti-Semitism, but I also condemn the people who don't acknowledge what's being done to the Palestinians. It's like, yeah, I'm sorry. So there are good people on both sides, or bad? I guess in this case, bad people on both sides. What utter hypocrisy. This is a guy who, after the Charlottesville rally, when right-wing anti-Semites were marching in Charlottesville, condemned that and said it was a defining moment for our country. And literally, he launched his presidential campaign because of Charlottesville, he says. It was the first words of his campaign announcement were Charlottesville, Virginia. Well, now there's a Charlottesville happening at Columbia. There's a Charlottesville happening at NYU. There's a Charlottesville happening on Harvard. And these aren't, you know, the right-wing anti-Semites are fringe characters, right? This is not the fringe. This is the mainstream of the Democratic Party. And he's got a problem in his own encampment. And because it's left-wing anti-Semites, he can't be anywhere to be found to condemn these people unequivocally. Not by saying, well, they're bad people on both sides. Just unequivocally, you know, this guy, you know, I don't understand why he's incapable of, you know, Bill Clinton very famously had that sister soldier moment, right, where he stood up to the radicals rapper in his own party, right? Why can't Joe Biden do that? It would help him politically. There, he would gain more
but you know,
with people seeing him to be courageous standing up to this than he gains by pandering to these people.
But I think that you know the answer to that, Mark. He feels as though I've worked really hard for giving loans to get those 18 to 22s back. And if I do that, I'm going to condemn – they're going to take it wrong. If I'm going to be on the wrong side of this issue. I mean, the reason why he isn't all in on Israel is because he sees people sympathize for the Palestinians and Hamas. So he thinks if I go and do that, I lose the young vote.
Yeah, with all respect, I mean, I think there are probably some young people who are the young voters who are more pro-Hamas than older voters. But I don't think that's the root of their problem with Biden. He was losing them before the war in Israel was happening. It's because of inflation. It's because they can't afford to buy homes. It's because of the economy.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff involved in why they are.
And you got to just do the right thing.
To him. And a lot of them also, by the way, are working class young people. I mean, you know, it is a small percentage of every generation that goes to college. The vast majority of people don't. Majority of Americans don't have college degrees. And do you think the young Americans who are 18 to 24 or whatever, who are welders, appreciate him paying off the student loans of people who are getting PhDs in gender studies?
I don't think so. So in Columbia, let me bring you inside the conversation. So, you know, that Lee Stefanik and others have recommended they fire, in a nice way, fire the president. So they bring us inside the talks that the president had, the president of Columbia. So evidently she went in last Thursday and said, pull up all the tents. And they went right back. And then she admitted she got brought in front of the school senate, and she admitted she made the wrong decision. She exasperated the problem by bringing in the cops. So essentially, they're not going to bring the cops now. She also could be facing a censure for doing so because they told her not to. So that would allow her to keep her job, but she would be censured. Now, They also never even talked to a Jewish student representative who was talking to them about how they feel. She was her decision to go hybrid learning, first all the Jews off campus, also to nullify the Jewish professor's card. So endangered students, doesn't matter. Leave the encampment. That's what the deal is. She says it's all going to be up in a couple of days. The students, when interviewed, said we don't have any plans on leaving at all. So I don't know how she's going to handle all this. But if you think she's not been tough enough, the people that hired her think she's been too tough. Think about that for a second.
It's insane. And you know whose job isn't in trouble? The president of Vanderbilt University, who's expelled and suspended the students who took over the administration building in that school, because that's how you deal with this. And by the way, have you noticed when you look at these encampments, all the tents are the same color and same brand?
Yep.
In all these, in not just in Columbia, but in a lot of these other schools, I wonder where they're getting these tents. Do you think these pro-Hamas students all went to REI together and said, I'd like to order 400 tents?
It's called the Popular Front, a U.S. designated terror group. They released a statement,
exactly.
By the way. Yeah.
These are pro-Hamas groups, outsiders that are invading these campuses and teaming up with students inside to disrupt the education of the students. She's got an obligation to protect. I mean, the fact that Jewish students are going back to online schooling, that they can't come to their classes, that they can't get their education. Your job as the president of the university, job one, is to deliver the education these students paid for. Period, full stop. Anybody who is interfering in that needs to be removed. It doesn't matter what the frigging cause is. It doesn't matter whether they're justified or unjustified. You cannot go to a university and interfere with the university's ability to deliver an education.
I mean, you have to see, not only is that not the case and nothing happening, it's getting worse. So Princeton and Harvard found a way to get into their square. They're putting up their tent cities. Now Princeton doing the same thing. Brown, they say they warned students that their encampments broke university rules. There's about 90 students there in tents. I didn't hear much about that until this morning. So there, this Popular Front, the designated terror group that's supporting a lot of this, they're calling for an escalation. Now, school's supposed to end in a couple of weeks. I mean, my daughter's on trimesters, goes till June, but most people don't. So they can end a couple of weeks. Are they going to stay past when they're supposed to stay? I mean, what's going on here?
I don't know. Well, they obviously don't need campus housing because they built it themselves, so they can probably stay as long as they want. I know a lot of schools have, you know, summer session and things like that. So I suppose that they could, the semester ends, but the school continues in the summer. So who knows what the heck's gonna go on? This is just, you know, it's insanity. And can I tell you something?
Real quick,
this is all gonna help to elect Donald Trump. You know, Joe Biden came in and he said, I'm gonna end the chaos. That's why people voted out Trump. They liked what he was doing.
And look what happened.
But look at is there less chaos in the world today? Two wars, a border out of control, and our college campuses are on fire. Are you experiencing less chaos than you were 4 years ago?
Zero.
That's the question everyone should ask.
It's the craziest. Every day is crazier than the next.
We're in the chaos.
And what about the order? I didn't even do the big three. There's no order in the world anymore, Mark Thiessen. And that's how important you are. Mark, thanks so much.
All right.
And Allison's going to give you my schedule on your podcast. And it's basically all open for May.
You know,
I don't have anything scheduled.
Have a podcast. We're not going to even have a topic. We're just going to be, what the hell's going on with Brian Kilmeade? You know, if you can cancel the big three for me, I'll cancel it'll just be about you. We'll just do a podcast.
That whole retrospective with George W. Bush canceled because Brian Kilmeade's going on Mark's podcast. Go get him, Mark.
Excellent.
Thank you. Read the Washington Post. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think what we're seeing and what we're seeing on college campuses is the fact that Hamas and other Islamist groups that hate America, hate Israel, have long created networks of supporters and sympathizers in American academia. Country like Qatar that hosts Hamas as endowed chairs at American universities. So this is not something organic that we're seeing all of a sudden. It's part of a long engineered plan.
Dr. Lorenzo Zinito, she was on, and actually, Carly Shimkus turns credit for this. She read a story that he wrote 20 years ago. He said there was a big meeting that Hamas had, and they made a big project. Their project was to infiltrate academia at the highest level and start selling their story. They said it was right after the Oslo Agreement with Yasser Arafat and I believe Ehud Barak after the Oslo, and I could be wrong, with Clinton orchestrating it. And they said, listen, we have to make sure that the Palestinians run by Hamas start getting a foothold in America. And this is the result. 20 years later, this is the result, where Hamas is the most popular thing on campus. Israel is built on stolen land, and now they're actually defending Hamas's brutal raid. This is incredible. It's reversible, but it's incredible how we could go to sleep at the switch. Everybody except Andy McCarthy. Andy McCarthy wrote a book about this. Back in a moment.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I also expect to see a multi-year investment cycle before we fully scale Meta AI, business AIs, and more into the profitable services I expect as well. Historically, investing to build these new scaled experiences in our apps has been a very good long-term investment for us and for investors who have stuck with us. And the initial signs are quite positive here too. But building the leading AI will also be a larger undertaking than the other experiences we've added to our apps, and this is likely going to take several years.
Mark Zuckerberg, of course, is in inescapable tone. He's commenting on the fact that his stock sunk after a weak forecast. They lost $200 billion in value in hours after Facebook owner warned it will invest more than expected in AI. And those are the words. So if you're invested in Facebook, hold on tight. They have expenses that are as high as $40 billion. They're trying to redo things. Looks like Apple beat them to those Oculus, right? Did I say that right? Okay, nobody's sure. Here's more from Mark Zuckerberg, Cup 47.
AI is already helping us improve app engagement, which naturally leads to seeing more ads, and improving ads directly to deliver more value. So if the technology and products evolve in the way that we hope, each of those will unlock massive amounts of value for people and business for us over time. We're seeing good progress on some of these efforts already. Right now, about 30% of the posts on Facebook feed are delivered by our AI recommendation system. That's up 2x over the last couple of years. And for the first time ever, more than 50% of the content that people see on Instagram is now AI recommended.
It's interesting. Maybe they bought Instagram. Couple of things about this. I have no, you know, if you're looking for investment reasons, that's one thing. AI is also something we are in a bit of a rush as a country to win. But as this relates to TikTok, so one thing the president put on Truth Social, and I'll paraphrase, he said about TikTok, it is so, the fact that it's going to be banned, that's the responsibility of Joe Biden. So what Donald Trump is saying, hey, young people, whatever you think, I'm not president. He put it in. Yeah, it was my idea originally, but he's the one that's doing it. Number two, I don't want to help Facebook. I don't want to help Google. I agree. I mean, the president of the United States has every reason to be upset with Facebook. Remember what they uncovered with the Twitter files. Can you imagine what the Facebook files would look like? Google? Imagine what the Google files would look like? But it's about American companies and foreign companies. It's about a foreign entity who's clearly an enemy in every way of America, a competitor the way we thought. An enemy is more accurate. Can't have them owning major media conglomerates. Now, you might say, well, it's an app. Yeah, it's an app. It's a communications app, social media app, now used by 170 million people on average between 45 and 60 minutes a day. Go on and look at that feed. Find out how many negative articles have been written about China. How about zero? How many positive articles about Taiwan? Next to zero. When it talks about the Palestinian Hamas, at a proportion of like 50 to 1, maybe higher, positive Hamas Palestinian stories to Israel. Now, if that's an American company, we haul them in, we talk it out. What are you doing? What do you think's going on? Don't you understand you have a responsibility to the American people to even pretend that you have a balanced approach, or else we're going to start regulating you? That's the difference. People say, well, you don't want to get, you know, let's compete for free speech. I'm not giving China free speech. They have a Communist Party member on the board. Every company is forced to open up their technology to the government at a moment's notice, almost on creation. So I'm sorry. That's a little bit different than we're dealing with. So that's my big problem. I don't think Zuckerberg and the president and Jeff Bezos are ever going to be in compliance. Got it. Understand. But at least they're American and we can deal with it from there. People sell their souls to China and just lobby for TikTok should be ashamed of themselves. They're not stopping. They have a few moves they can make, but this is going to be tougher to delay. Why? Because this is not executive order from President Trump. This is legislation passed through both houses and signed by the president. Here's TikTok CEO, Cut 35.
Make no mistake, this is a ban. It's actually ironic because the freedom of expression on TikTok reflects the same American values that make the United States a beacon of freedom. Rest assured, we aren't going anywhere. We are confident and we will keep fighting for your rights in the courts.
Right. You're doing it for me. I owe you one. Please. Jeff Yass, the big time Republican donor who gets into the pockets of people like Senator Rand Paul, who hire, not Jeff Yass does, but TikTok hires people like Trent Lott to go ahead. And they're trying to rationalize going to bat for this very popular app. They got a great technology going. It doesn't seem like Instagram has replicated it. Seems like they're getting close. And I like a balanced playing field, but not when China's involved. And isn't it great to get a lecture about freedom from a Chinese official, even if he is from Singapore? Cut 36, Jake Sullivan, on the hypocrisy of banning TikTok while allowing the campaign to keep using TikTok, knowing they're getting all our information. Cut 36.
So I'm going to let campaigns decide for themselves what they're going to do. The terms of the bill are straightforward. TikTok continues to operate as it is right now until such time as either there is divestment or the time that you referred to elapses. And so what we're focused on right now in implementing the bill is working through that divestment in a way that is consistent with the intent of the law and consistent with the national security concerns that brought the law into force in the first place.
Wish we have. People like Mike Gallander, Gallagher, Marine, now he moved on, and people like Senator Josh Hawley. Listen, people seem to like TikTok. That's fine. But you have to think about your country first. I'm going to be back with Speaker Mike Johnson. Man, he's been in the eye of the storm lately. Can't wait to get his perspective. Congresswoman Omar just called him out for going to Columbia. You'll hear his response when we come back.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I mean, let's be honest about it. Joe Biden himself, I mean, Sean, he doesn't know how to use an iPhone. He probably doesn't know how to use a flip phone. I mean, he's not doing this. This is all about the people who are running his campaign for him, and they will do anything to pander. And I tell you what, the amount of pro-Hamas propaganda on TikTok, I mean, it is a propaganda factory pushing out this propaganda from China, trying to divide the country, trying to destroy Jewish Americans. And the Biden administration, they're happy to go along with it because they want these people's votes.
And that is Senator Josh Hawley, who I disagree with him on the Ukraine aid. He didn't want to give it. I'm all for it. But when it comes to TikTok, he gets it. And that I really appreciate. I almost feel at a disadvantage because I'm not on it. But everybody else is. And this pro-Hamas stuff that's coming out, this news feed that's out there, the algorithm that profiles you, I think it's definitely noteworthy. It's one of the things that's in the bill that Speaker Johnson was able to get through the House, signed by the Senate and by the president yesterday, and it is now official. Joining us now on the road, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Mr. Speaker, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, my friend. Great to hear your voice.
Well, I'm in New York. You're smart enough to have left New York, I hope. How would you describe, I just salute you for having the courage to go down there and speak your mind with Congressman D'Esposito, as well as Mike Lawler, to go down there and Virginia Fox and speak your mind. Were you surprised about the backlash you got?
I guess I wasn't surprised, but I was certainly disappointed. We confronted that mob, and that's what it is. It's a mob. Mob rule is being allowed there on the campus, and they're terrorizing Jewish students. And it's the same mob, by the way, Brian, that Hamas officially endorsed. I mean, literally 2 hours before we had our press conference, Hamas issued an endorsement statement of these kids and heralded them as the next generation of leaders in America. God help us. I mean, what we're seeing on these college campuses across America is disgusting. It is unacceptable. It is not who we are as a country. No student of any race or religion should have to leave campus because it's become too dangerous. It's just outrageous, and the rampant anti-Semitism is something that these administrators have to be immediately accountable for.
Well, one of your colleagues, not your peer, but one of your colleagues in Congress, Democrat, Congresswoman Omar, whose daughter was kicked out of campus and suspended, and I believe detained briefly, said this yesterday.
And it is not surprising that he would go out to Columbia University and stir up really more anger and hate and endanger the lives of young people who are at the encampment at Columbia University.
So you stirred things up in her mind.
It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd for her to say that. It's incredible that us going there to meet with and speak out on behalf of Jewish students' safety could be seen as divisive in any way. This is exactly the problem. It's actually an issue that ought to be uniting every elected official. But some of these folks are afraid to speak out, and others, like my colleague Omar, are saying exactly the wrong thing. Look, if these universities would be held accountable and protect their students on campus, we wouldn't need to be there. We wouldn't need to speak out. And the House has taken action to do everything that's within our power, and we're going to do more. But we need everybody who has a platform, every elected official, to be on the right side of this. And sadly, some of them are doing exactly the wrong thing.
Well, some Democrats like Moskowitz got it. He gets it on this. He's out there fighting for it. Josh Gottheimer's fighting for it. Senator Schumer is not. You've dealt with him a lot of late. Where is the highest, most powerful Jewish American in political history, the majority leader in New York? Where is he?
It's a very important question. You know, he is the highest ranking Jewish official in the history of our country. He has a huge megaphone, and he ought to be using it to protect Jewish students. Look, we went to a Passover meal before we began our press conference, and these students are afraid for their safety. They can't go to class. They can't walk around on campus wearing a Star of David, or they are targeted. They're being harassed, intimidated. You know, it's turning to violence on some of these campuses, and it's completely out of hand. You know, we've sent legislation to Chuck Schumer's desk. The House Education and Workforce Committee, of course, has been having these high-profile oversight hearings of these colleges and their leadership, holding them accountable, and you've seen that. But we've also passed legislation. We passed the Deterrent Act, which shines a light on foreign money influencing American universities. We passed the No Immigration Benefits for Hamas Terrorist Act, okay, that just says simply remove illegals who have supported Hamas's terrorist attack on October 7th. But Chuck Schumer is allowing those measures to sit on his desk and collect dust. He is strangely silent here.
Why?
And we need him and the president to speak out.
Why? You know why, but go ahead and say it.
Yeah. Well, because they have a political problem, right? They have a pro-Hamas wing that is rising in their party, and they're terrified to step into the middle of that. But this is the time for decisive moral leadership. This is not a gray area. This is good versus evil. You have to protect the physical safety of students. That's what's at stake here. It's chaos and mayhem and anarchy, and that's not who we are in this country.
So Speaker Johnson, our guest, and he's on the road in between appointments, just had an important conversation. But, Mr. Speaker, Ukraine, you know I've been firmly for Ukraine aid. I absolutely think Ronald Reagan would have done it. We're back in the Cold War mindset. America should never have left it. So you get 65 billion over to Ukraine. You get more money to Israel. I understand the first billion is going over. Can you give me an idea of what we're sending and what we're replenishing?
It's such an important point, Brian, and I think this is lost on most people. But of the $60 billion that dedicated for Ukraine, $48 billion of that, 80%, is going to be used for the replenishment of American weapons and stocks and facilities, our operations. This is us. This is American jobs. building updated equipment. There's a lot of accountability. You know, we broke the Senate supplemental package up into four pieces, and we added some really important innovations and changes to that. Among that is oversight and strict accountability. By the way, we put in the legislation that Joe Biden just signed into law, a demand, a requirement of his office to present to Congress within 45 days a specific game plan, an in-game strategy for Ukraine. We haven't had that before. We added all that accountability into it. And remember, the other 20% of the Ukrainian funds, we converted into a loan. And that's something that President Trump, among others, have championed, that just makes sense. These are not blank checks. It's a very different thing. But to your point, Brian, it's a very important time in the history of our country and of the world. The world is on fire because Joe Biden is such a weak leader on the world stage. All of our adversaries are working together, by the way, and acting so provocatively. China, Russia, Iran, even North Korea, they are coordinating these efforts. And if America shrinks back right now, we upset the entire world order. Since World War II, the leadership of the free world has been hoisted upon our shoulders. That's what Ronald Reagan said. We have to acknowledge that. It does not mean that we're the world's policemen. But if you're going to pursue America First policies, right, our own national security is critical to keep in mind.
But here's what's different. And I don't have to tell you that there's a huge contingent in the House and people like J.D. Vance in the Senate. And no one doubts J.D. Vance's service to our country, his remarkable personal story, and his intellect. But he wants nothing to do with this aid. What is your message? And not that you guys all have to agree on everything, but this is a fundamental thing that conservatives used to agree on.
It is. J.D. Vance is a friend. I love him. He's great. And he's very intelligent and all of that. But we see this very differently. There are people in our party now who self-described as isolationists. I'm not putting words in J.D.'s mouth. He can speak for himself. But there are people who believe that it's not America first, but America only. That is not an acceptable result, because what happens is, listen, the only reason that terrorists and tyrants are kept at bay is because there is the perception of a strong America. The perception of us being the great superpower is what keeps peace on the world stage. It's Reagan. It's peace through strength. We have to send that message to the world and let them know America will not shrink back, because if it does, Brian, everything escalates and we will wind up in another world war conflict. If Vladimir Putin was allowed to march through Ukraine, he would take Kyiv in a short period of time and he would be on the border of NATO states, the Baltic states and Poland would be there. And our generals, our four-star generals who are in charge of that region, anticipate that our costs would go up exponentially because there would be a demand for U.S. troops there. Right now, a small investment to hold Putin at bay and get this thing to a point where Trump can broker a peace is exactly the right strategy, and we have no choice in the matter.
What about the repo act of the Russian assets that have been captured and detained from the yachts around the world? I know most of the money's in Europe. What have you done on that?
Yeah, well, we added that into the legislation, and we have a little less than $10 billion in that account that we can use, you know, the seized assets of corrupt Russian oligarchs funding the resistance in Ukraine is just pure poetry, right?
So you are going to take that $10 billion and give it to Zelensky?
Well, yes, we're going to use it for the Ukrainian effort. That will be part of the funding. That's part of the law that's just been signed, that we will convert that. And because we have I think $6-7 billion, something in that range. It's a start. But there are over $100 billion or more that's out there. It's some estimates $300 billion that are held in our European allies' accounts. And what we're trying to do is send a message that they need to assist and use those funds as well. I think that's the right result here, and I think it makes a lot of sense to a lot of people.
All right. So are you also going to condemn any time a rocket hits Russian land?
Yes. I mean, listen, what Ukraine is trying to do, what I believe their plan is to use the ATACMS and the weapon systems that they specifically requested from us, by the way, for a long time, that Joe Biden would not send. They'll have that now, and they'll be able to push back their longer-range rockets. But their objective is to defend their own land. They are not the aggressor. It's Vladimir Putin and the Russians who are doing that. Their goal is to push them back and hold them at bay, and I think they will, and I hope that's where it ends. We need to get this thing to a point of a peace resolution to stop the bloodshed and stop the madness. But I fear, Brian, that we won't be able to do that until we have a strong leader in the White House again, and I believe that's going to be Donald Trump in January.
Speaker Mike Johnson, thanks so much.
From From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. It seems like a brand new studio with nothing but flat screens around me with my name floating in there, just like I've dreamed. But we're going to be able to put different stuff in there, different themes. It's going to be great. This hour, we're going to be joined by Kellyanne Conway, Dr. Nicole Sapphire, brand new book out, Mother's Day Looming. She's got one. We also can talk to her about what else is going on in the world. She can handle it all. As you know, she's just fresh off a great stint hosting Fox and Friends. We're watching now, it's fascinating, the Supreme Court, just the audio, going back and forth on the immunity case. We're also getting reports from people in the overflow room who are able to text us about what's happening in the Donald Trump, potential violation of a gag order, which should never exist. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Make no mistake, this is a ban. It's actually ironic because the freedom of expression on TikTok reflects the same American values that make the United States a beacon of freedom. Yeah, rest assured, we aren't going anywhere.
Well, you're going to fight in the courts, but this time it's legislation you got to fight, Mr. CEO from Singapore. TikTok war begins as the Chinese media monster fights for the American presence. The hypocrisy of this administration as they sign the ban yet use the app.
Number two.
Today was the first time I've actually been in the same room with Donald Trump. He is taller than you might expect and walks in a gait that is shufflier than you'd think, kind of a shuffly waddle. And he's definitely a scowler. I can also confirm that he has a strangely orange hue.
She's hysterical. Trump trials on two fronts. You got the Supreme Court will hear arguments right now for presidential immunity. And day seven of the New York case, we're going to lay out the arguments and the stakes.
Number one.
This is obviously very highly organized. This is not spontaneous. There's a group that's organizing these around the country. If you look at a lot of the encampments, the tents are identical. Somebody bought them. Somebody put in an order for these. These are not just students showing up.
Cornell Law Professor William Jacobson, unprecedented, unacceptable cesspool of students sitting in and taking over college campuses throughout the country, from Texas to USC, now Princeton, Harvard, Columbia, NYU, and Brown. Praised by Hamas and the Grand Ayatollah of Iran, the personification of evil, it's time for a crackdown. Just a quick reminder, you can always get the podcast if you ever miss the show at briankilmeade.com or wherever you get your podcast. With me right now is Kellyanne Conway. Kellyanne, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. It's great to see you. How are you?
Hey, Kellyanne. One thing is pretty clear. The President of the United States had a brilliant move. This morning at 6:30, we're on Fox and Friends. We get word that he's going to show up. And he greeted the Teamsters, about between 200 and 500, at which time they're chanting his name, chanting USA. He actually met with the press and went back to Trump Tower and then went to court. Is that that is something you would support, right? Making the most of these court days?
Absolutely. It's brilliant. And he can bookend these court days with activities like that. They have off every Wednesday because the court, I guess, is understaffed and underfunded, which tells you a lot of what you need to know about this proceeding. And he's making good use. They just announced that President Trump will be in Michigan and Wisconsin next Wednesday for events because they're not in session. And he's able to go to the bodega. This is the guy who went to honor the falling officer not far from your home, Brian, in Massapequa, New York. And this is the guy who went to East Palestine long before the Pete Buttigieg, whose job it is to go there, or President Biden, whose job it is to go there. He has a sense for the people, and the people in many ways are overwhelmingly supporting him. I think his constituency, his coalition this year in 2024 is more diverse, is larger, and I would even say is more loyal and solid than in the past two elections. He's got this great combination, Brian, of the hunger, swagger, underdog, underestimated Donald Trump from 2016, coupled with a four-year presidential record, and a guy who currently occupies the Oval Office, who has just been a disaster by anyone's measure, by anyone's polling. Joe Biden is underwater in all of the polls, including, if not especially, those being put forth by academic institutions and media outlets, Brian, that want Joe Biden to get a second term.
So when you talk about Florida and Arizona, they have one thing in common. They seem to be intent on putting abortion on the ballot. And Republicans have not solved this. Well, how does that make both states more challenging?
It does make both states more challenging. And It has not been solved 2 years after the fall of Roe and the Dobbs decision, in large part because we have this odd combination of people who wanted to run to the state ballot initiatives and outlaw abortion completely in their states before they explain to people what that might mean, or that there were trigger laws, or that we the people can decide what a ballot initiative says. And then we've got other people just hiding under the desks, hoping that the political shrapnel of abortion will never hit them. I have news for the members of Congress, senators, candidates. You want to lead this country, you have to express your opinion. But the point, Brian, is to be consistent and authentic in your explanation. I have a different approach to all this. I think there is a federal role, and I believe that 15 weeks is the Dobbs fact pattern, and it seems reasonable only in this way. I'm pro-life. I believe life begins at conception, ends at natural death. I understand why Donald Trump and the other five Republican presidents we've elected since 1973's Roe versus Wade have all had the same opinion. They've all said, whether it's Nixon, Ford, Reagan, Bush, Trump, I'm pro-life with exceptions for rape or incest conceptions and life for the mother. If you add to that the early stages of pregnancy, then you have a consensus. If you add first trimester, you at least have a consensus. What's happening in states like California, New York, New Jersey, Illinois, Colorado, this is abortion almost up to the moment of birth. It's well past viability. It's well past, Brian, the point at which so many babies now, thankfully, because of scientific and medical advances, are born prematurely, surviving and thriving. And so that would be my challenge to the left. You always want to know what our exceptions are. What are yours? Do you have exception for when the fetus can feel pain, 15 weeks or so? Do you have exceptions for sex selection abortions? Who wants that third daughter? I don't, people say, and they go and schedule an abortion. No, they don't, Kellyanne. Yes, they do. Nobody stops them from doing that. Stop kidding yourself. You may not like it, but it's the fact. Taxpayer-funded abortion, late-term abortions. And I would ask Kamala Harris in that vice presidential debate, what are your exceptions? And Madam Vice President, in your state of California, where abortion is legal up to about 39 weeks, which we all know is the birth time and after, Brian, then Vice President Harris, what about you coming to the point of viability? What about you coming to 23 weeks and 5 days when the baby, you know, Joe Blow Brown here in California was born?
So let's talk about what's happening in the trial downtown. Kellyanne, people keep saying that you're going to be on the list, the witness list, and Hope Hicks is going to be on the witness list. Now, we know that Karen McDougal, maybe Michael Avenatti, we know that David Pecker is on the stand now, we believe. So what have they told you?
Nothing. I testified to that grand jury for 2 days last year, last March, and then told President Trump, in my opinion, he was going to be indicted, not based on the answers I provided, but based on the questions I was asked. And here we are. I'll wait, I guess, to express certain things that I've also expressed in my book 2 years ago. Brian, here's the deal: that the idea that I would have authorized paying women is absurd. That wasn't part of our campaign strategy. I was on your programs like yours all day long on every network imaginable. We got billions of dollars in free press. And they resent that. They'll never forgive us for that. The unspoken bargain was Hillary was supposed to win and all this would be over by November 8th. Obviously, history had a different plan in mind, as did the people. But here's the thing. As campaign manager, I never would have done this. Certainly wasn't part of our strategy. I was transparent about our strategy every single day. We're going to Michigan and Wisconsin two more times. Here we go with Pennsylvania. I'm going today with Melania Trump to Pennsylvania. Why Pennsylvania, Kellyanne? Isn't it Republicans' fool's gold? They'd ask me on Morning Joe. Yes, it has been, but we find the same messages that are working in Iowa and Ohio, North Carolina, are working in Western Pennsylvania and other places. So we need to mitigate the losses that Mitt Romney suffered in the collar counties around Philadelphia and run up the totals elsewhere. Very transparent about the strategy. And we had survived Access Hollywood, Brian. We're going to turn around and pay someone, a porn person. And I don't call her a star because star is an opinion and I have no way to form that opinion.
Good point. I've talked to legal experts. They still don't see the case. They see a lot of salacious ways to delay the president at the very least, and they see an appeal if there's a conviction, but the president's really chomping at the bit because he hates sitting in there, obviously, in a drab, cold courtroom hearing negative things about himself. It's hard to imagine. If you want to know what he's up against, it's pretty clear. Trying to make him feel bad about it and constantly campaigning suddenly is Joe Biden. at which time speaking, he likes to say everything that's in the prompter. And I mean everything. Cut 42.
I see an economy that grows from the middle out and the bottom up, where the wealthy pay their fair share, so we can have child care, paid leave, and so much more, and still reduce the federal deficit and increase economic growth. Folks, imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years.
Right. So how did that go?
Well, pause was the most important word. That's right. What I think of when I think of Papa Biden. Pause. I thought it was ironic. It's typical. The only person who operates a teleprompter worse than him is his vice president. I feel, Brian, we're going to discover, I don't know, years from now, maybe a few months from now, that whoever was operating Kamala Harris's teleprompter is a Trump mole. There's no other explanation for this. So, yeah, Biden's out there. They have him talking about issues that the country doesn't have on their top priority list. He still won't declare a true crisis at the southern border, won't do anything about the invasion of our country, the unfairness to our school children in New York being plucked from their seats to put a migrant child there. You get here, you get cash, a cell phone, clothing, hotel rooms, some shelter. And he won't acknowledge that the inflation problems and the economic downturn for so many Americans, they still feel it. Forget what the macroeconomists say, Brian. Biden won't acknowledge it's a man-made crisis. He created that. Putin didn't create that. COVID didn't create that. He created that. Energy dependence, killing those Keystone pipeline jobs in his first week out of spite, declaring war on fossil fuels instead of war on Hamas, war on the Houthis, war on Iran. He is at war on the border. He started a couple new wars, the Afghanistan pullout. None of this has been litigated, and I'll do you one better. Somebody asked me yesterday, oh, well, you know, we don't know how the voters really feel about Donald Trump and January 6th and election denial. Yes, we do. It's in the news every day. We had a congressional committee. We paid for that, you and me, taxpayers. Of course we know what people think of that. That's all baked into their opinion of Donald Trump and their assessment of this binary race, Biden and Trump. Mm-hmm. What we don't truly know is how Americans will react when they are reminded of failing after flailing on the policies of Joe Biden and the Biden family. He lied. Joe Biden lied because you're not under oath in these presidential debates. Nobody on TV is under oath, folks. Remind yourselves, he lied when he said in response to that very simple, straightforward question about did you discuss business with your son Hunter? What about his laptop? He lied to all of us. That should be relitigated to the people in the court of public opinion by way of debates and other questions.
Kellyanne, when would you name your running mate if you were advising President Trump?
I would wait. We have an early convention this time, mid-July. That's pretty early. I think he can do it sometime in May or June if he wanted to. Really June, maybe the beginning of July. People are so excited to hear about his pick, partly because many people think he'll win, and they want to know who's going to be ready on day one, who's going to help him win and help him govern, which are three of my major criteria for the pick. And the other reason, Brian, is very simple. Nobody, and I mean nobody, including Democrats, you and I know, want to talk about Joe Biden's VP pick. What a disaster that was 4 years ago. I think Donald Trump can't go wrong when you compare Kamala Harris to his choices. But I know he's looking in many different directions. He's got lots of different names and job descriptions out there. And I don't think he can go wrong. I think he can go super right with some of the choices. But this, in the end, this is Donald Trump. He'll keep us guessing. His short list will be long. And he's got a couple great, I think, chips to cash in, including his VP pick to make some positive news.
I'm going to figure, I have a very coy way of asking this. So who do you hope is on his short list?
Well, I've got a lot of people.
Can you give me your top three that you hope is on his list?
My top three would still be Marco Rubio, Tim Scott. I put Senator Bill Hagerty in there. I know that the president is even looking beyond governors or members of Congress or business people and to the Senate. Beyond even Tim Scott, they'd be top of my list. I know he's looking at Byron Donald, and J.D. Vance has often mentioned him. J.D. Vance voted for Evan McMullen. I think they've sewed up their relationship since then. And I think J.D. Vance is a great new senator in the Senate. So that's the other thing. Who do you want to take out of where they are,
right,
and what's the cost there? There's plenty of women to choose from. I don't think he needs a woman. I'd prefer him to choose somebody who the donors who pretend they're reluctant and who want somebody day one readiness. That would be like a Hagerty, a Pompeo, right, a Marco Rubio, certainly. And the other thing is, I just think he's going to have monster returns among voters of color, especially young men or men males, Hispanic and African American, and that if he picked somebody of that demographic, then that could absolutely help. I could see Marco Rubio, if he and Jeanette are willing to give up his Senate seat, I mean, he'd have to do that. He'd have to move out of Florida constitutionally, as would Byron Donalds, the congressman from the Naples area. But, you know, when the presidential nominee calls your name, I think you answer the call.
Yeah, he could probably live at one of his golf courses until the election, whoever he picks. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be everything's unprecedented. We'll see what the president chooses to do after and before court, while also trying to find out what's happening in court, while listening to the Supreme Court, the audio of the Supreme Court, which is going on right now as they debate immunity of the presidency. Kellyanne, even with all your experience, we've never seen anything like it, which I'm so glad you're part of the team to break it down for us.
Thank you, Ryan. All the best. See you soon.
All right. Listen, back in a moment with your calls, and Dr. Nicole Sapphire comes in. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Demonstrations themselves are not something that we, the FBI, get involved in. But when violence ensues, that's when we get concerned, when you have threats of violence.
Are you actively monitoring these protests?
We don't monitor protests, but we do share intelligence about specific threats of violence.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of threats of violence in it. Do you call this a threat of violence? This is at the University of Texas, Austin, Cut 5.
Pigs go home! Pigs go home! Pigs go home!
You believe this? I mean, that's what they're saying in Texas to cops. Now, I know Austin's a bastion of insanity, where homeless come to vegetate and where drugs are sold openly. But compared to the rest of Texas, I am so glad they have a great governor who went in there with cops on horseback to immediately get respect and tear up these tents. You will not take over the center square. If you take over the center square and do something, you know, I don't know, Obamacare, abortion, you know, stuff that has something to do with our country, but you're going to a bat for a cause you never even acknowledged, nobody's ever visited, you can't find them on the map. Since October 7th, the anti-Semitism is through the roof instead of people running to the Jewish Americans, they're running from them. And then, of course, isolating Israel. And can't you just hear when they say Israel built on stolen land? Are they really talking about us? Because a lot of these heretics with the war on history said America was built off the backs of slavery on stolen land. They like to say that while living in the land of the free, where they have no interest in leaving. But we should. We should give all these foreign students protesting against us, they're out of here. Immediately. Just like if my daughter was in Australia studying, if she was protesting that country, they would kick her out, and I'd support it.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Such an interesting conversation we're having now. As you hear the Supreme Court, obviously I don't have a law degree, but it's interesting. They're not talking over our head. They're talking very practically. And one of the arguments was, couldn't you right now, they say, what about in a situation, they're trying to argue what the president has immunity for. Can you be sued? For example, the Iraq war starts and you feel it's because of weapons of mass destruction. They can't find weapons of mass destruction. You end up coming out with PTSD or you lost a limb and you want to sue. Or you're the wife of a spouse that loses their life there. And you want to sue. Can you sue the president for that? And then someone just brought up, what about FDR? Rounded up all the Japanese and put them in internment camps. Is that allowed? Should they pay the price for that? Interesting question, right? As it relates to January 6th, as it relates to the documents, and that's the president directly. The best scenario for the president, the former president, would be for it to be kicked down to a lower court and have limited immunity. And they debate what that immunity is and whether it actually should apply in this case, in either one of these cases. If they say the president's got absolute immunity, which nobody says they're going to rule, then that means the case is over, I think. Definitely January 6th is over. So let's bring in Dr. Nicole Sapphire, one of the most talented people in the building, certainly one of the smartest. She's got a brand new book out called Love Mom, Inspiring Stories Celebrating Motherhood. The book is now out, is able to get it. And I'll tell you, this is a perfect time to get it, especially for Mother's Day. You can just knock that one present out of the park. Dr. Sapphire, welcome.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
First, you are a mom and a doctor, and you're also doing the news now. So you're probably you're a multitasker, to say the least. First off, do you have a situation where we could get a signed book if people want to get it for Mother's Day?
Well, first of all, I don't think I'm the only female multitasker out there. In fact, I think that is pretty much in line for this entire gender. So I applaud the ladies for all that we are doing constantly. We're running around bananas. Can we get a signed copy of the book? Yeah, we had a live signing last week. Rachel Campos Duffy and I did it in the comfort of our home. Premier Collectibles has a link on their website where you can get a signed copy. And in terms of live book signing, I think we're setting some up, and I will blast them all over social media if and when those get scheduled.
All right, that'll be great. What was your approach to doing the book?
Now, you know, my other books were all about healthy living, healthcare policy, which obviously I'm hugely passionate about. But this book particularly, this is very different for me, because anyone who has read it at this point knows that, you know, I didn't hold back. I revealed my authentic self. And that's really what this book is about. Now, it's not just my story. Chapter one is my story. And we talk about my non-traditional path into motherhood, an unplanned pregnancy when I was 17. I was that statistic. I was a teenager walking around the halls of high school. I delivered my son while I was still a high school student. And in fact, he was there my high school graduation. And then he was there for my college graduation and medical school graduation. And he himself has now graduated from college. So it's been an incredible 24 years with him. He's been the constant of my entire adult life. But it, not just my chapter, I was able to include so many other incredible stories, many Fox moms that people know and love, Ainsley Earhart, Janice Dean, Carly Shimkus, Martha McCallum, others. We even had Benjamin Hall's wife, Alicia. For those who don't know, Benjamin Hall was struck by a bomb in Ukraine. It was an incredible story of survival. And while he wrote an amazing book on it, in our book, the mom book, I was able to talk to his wife, Alicia, and get her perspective on everything that went down. That's an incredible read. And also some non-Fox people are in it. One of my patients, a Gold Star mom that I know. A lot of great stories, Brian. And let me tell you, this book will make people laugh. It'll make them cry. But at the end of the day, what I said to all the moms was, you have to reveal your authentic self. And you have to talk about something you haven't spoken about publicly. And if they couldn't do that, they weren't going to be a part of it. So I'm so grateful that they did. We talk about divorce, miscarriage, depression, cancer, suicide, all of the tough topics. But it's really a beautiful collection. There are scripture in it, quotes in it. I am so in love with how this turned out.
Don't you have a companion piece on Fox Nation?
On Fox Nation, yes, we had something come out last week that was the live show where Martha McCallum, Sandra Smith, Carly Shimkus, Janice Dean, and I sat and essentially had girl talk with a live audience. We tackled some tough topics like raising kids in the digital age, taking care of oneself, stuff like that. But we also have another Fox Nation special coming out Mother's Day weekend. Let me tell you, this is a 5-part series. You are in for an amazing treat. I sit down, I interview Jennifer Griffin, Ainsley Earhart, Kaylee McEnany, and some others, as well as we invited the camera crew into my own house. It's really special, Brian.
Wow, I can't wait. So it's on Fox Nation, so that'll be excellent. So your decision to have your son, right?
Yeah, that's
right. In high school, was that your toughest and best decision?
You know, it was an incredibly difficult decision. And in my chapter, I talk about everything I was feeling, all the feelings of isolation, loneliness, being terrified, being abandoned by people, and having a lot of people tell me that if I went through with the pregnancy, I would never become a physician, I would never have a successful life. I also, unfortunately, my church turned me away a little bit. I go into details in my chapter. So I was feeling quite abandoned. But I held true to my my morals and what I felt was important, and I decided myself alone that I was going to have the baby, and I was able to lean on my family and also my faith to kind of get me through some of those darkest times.
And your family was supportive?
So I talk about it in detail. My mom had the best response possible. She didn't tell me any of her emotions at the time. All she said was, well, you have a big decision to make, but just know I will be by your side no matter what happens. That was not a false promise of everything was going to be okay or my life would be the same and, you know, not to worry. There was none of that. Just to know that I wouldn't be alone, that meant the world to me. And then I would say that, you know, maybe some other people in my family didn't have the exact same response. They couldn't control their own emotion. I think everyone ultimately was just afraid that they knew I had so many goals in life, and they were afraid that I was never going to reach those goals by having a baby in high school.
And it didn't stop you. Why do you think it didn't stop you?
Well, Brian, you know me well enough. If people tell me I can't, I'm going to make sure I do twice over. So I certainly took that with me when I had what felt like the world telling me I wasn't going to make it. I really kind of took that as fuel to my fire to kind of push me along. Now, I'll tell you, though, 24 years later, I'll be honest, I wish I didn't have some of that negativity. I mean, I felt resentment, I felt anger, and I felt like I was doing a lot of things to prove myself to other people. And at the end of the day, I didn't have to prove myself to anybody, right? We just live our lives for us and our family, and everything else is pretty much just noise. So, you know, I wrote a letter on FoxNews.com to my younger self. If I could go back to that 17-year-old me, I would essentially tell her, don't focus so much on what other people think about you. It is so irrelevant in the grand scheme of life. Just know that you are going to create a beautiful life. You may not be taking the same path. You're kind of having to carve a different path. It may be longer. It may be harder. But you'll get there as long as you keep your family and your faith close to you.
And it's more than worked out, right?
Absolutely. And I've met some amazing people along the way. And, you know, it's not a sign of weakness to lean on other people or ask for help. In fact, it just makes you stronger. And so that's what I do. I kind of lean on this cadre of people and they lift me up. And here we are.
So, and then did you find other people were getting questions they never get? Like you asked Kaylee McEnany about being a mom. Like, it's very hard to get people to talk generally about something they're in the middle of. It's like being in the middle of a tornado and then saying, how do you feel about the tornado? Making them step back and analyze, they probably loved it. It was probably therapeutic for them.
Yeah, you know what? I'll tell you that a couple of them offline said to me, you know, reading their chapters, that actually made them cry. And they were just so, so grateful to be able to kind of relive some experiences and talk about it from a very different viewpoint. And really writing these chapters was just so cathartic. Kind of touching on things that maybe we suppressed and then looking back to see how much we've all overcome. I mean, it's really quite beautiful.
All right. Will you ever do a book on dads?
Well, actually, let me tell you, Brian, this book is for dads. And you know why? Because you're welcome, men. I just gave you a book that is an insight to a woman's soul and mind. You read these chapters and you'll understand women so much more, and it will certainly strengthen your relationships.
All right, doctor, when's the next time you're coming in?
Oh, my gosh, what's today? Thursday. I'll be there for the big weekend show Saturday and Sunday, and then I'll be on Fox and Friends Sunday.
Monday through Friday, she's a doctor, and sometimes other times during the week, she's an anchor, and sometimes she's a contributor, and sometimes she's a host and a mom. Go pick up her book, Mom, Inspiring Stories Celebrating Motherhood. Almost everybody in there you'll know and know more about. Congratulations, doctor.
Thanks so much, Brian.
You got it. Listen, 1-866-408-7669. We've been listening to some of the live audio. We also know there's a court case going on downtown. We're getting bullet points from the overflow room about what's happening in the Donald Trump case and the immunity trial. I'll try to recap it all if you come back on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I don't understand it because Israel is a democracy like we are, and Israel is our ally. What don't you get? And secondly, the students on Columbia blocking Jewish kids from going into school. I tweeted something about it because, I mean, I went to college, and I can't imagine having to deal with this.
John Lovitz weighing in, and, you know, was a big name for a while. He's solid. I think he owns a comedy club. He has a great stand-up routine. But he's like, why am I the only guy speaking out? I mean, you have Michael Rappaport. I give him great credit. But why am I able to name them all? Jerry Seinfeld went over to Israel. I give him great credit for that. Not that he's looking for credit for me. But, I mean, he speaks out. It matters to him. Then he gets harassed leaving a comedy club the other night. So he's got to walk around with security. But still, isn't it worth it? Here's more from John Lovitz. Cut 18.
People like, you know, who are Jewish like myself are naive and thought, oh, there's not all this anti-Semitism. I think it's always been there. It's just coming out. But what you kind of said about, you know, you respect everybody, whatever their religion, whatever their race, you respect everybody. That's what Judaism, the religion, is about, is respecting life and people.
Yeah, and he wrote some things, put some stuff on Twitter. He was on last night on primetime. Here's more from John Lovitz, cut 19.
Preventing students from going to class, it's ridiculous. It happened to a friend of mine. I was speaking to her this morning. She has one kid at Duke University, and she has another kid at Cornell. At Duke University, months ago, they started doing a protest, and they nipped it in the bud and said, no, you can't do that here. And they've had no problems since. Cornell didn't. They've had all these problems. Her daughter couldn't go to class. She couldn't take a test. And the teacher wouldn't respond to her, and she had trouble retaking it and finally got to. But it's bad.
Yeah, can you imagine that? And as the young man who was on with me today from Columbia, and I said, what do you think? He said, well, I'm definitely going to be harassed, but I'm going back on campus. I said, wait a second. You only have 1 week left. You're a senior. You have 1 week left. You could just do this on Zoom. He said, no, I'm going to class. I'm not going to back off. So this kid weighs about 130, 140 pounds. Good kid. Not a muscle-bound guy that's going to fight off people with neck tattoos. But now you have to go. He's got to find a way to go to class. He's got three more classes. He wants to finish strong. He's got to finish strong. He's got to go to law school. He wants to. Now he's probably going to take a year off in between. But you could just see he's flabbergasted. He's got to deal with this. And I said, what do your parents say? He said, they're worried about me. But they also think I should go. I think that's part of the Jewish community. Yeah, when things go bad, you keep going. And lastly, the question I opened with is, why just John Lovitz and Michael Rappaport speaking out? Cut 20.
I don't know why people say, why are you speaking up? Why aren't other people in Hollywood who are way bigger names than me not saying anything? And my answer is, I don't know. I think they're afraid, or they're afraid they're going to lose their, it'll hurt their business. But I feel like it's so bad. How can you not say something? Like, you have to.
Of course. I mean, I'm not going to just call it in particular, but doesn't Adam Sandler do the Hanukkah song? I mean, I never know people's religion. I've always been the worst at that. But I'm from a town. It's from Massapequa. They called it matzah pizza. It's half Italian, half Jewish. And I've just had no cognizance of where you are. Do you go to church on Saturday, or do you go to synagogue on Saturday, or church on Sunday? I never thought about it, only as it relates to sports. And one of the first times I thought about it in a public setting was Joe Lieberman, because when Joe Lieberman was named running mate for Al Gore, he goes, by the way, I can't use any electricity. I think it's on Friday or Saturday. And if you talk to anybody who's Orthodox Jewish, you can't really contact them. They've shut down all electronics. But I'm not judging them. I'm just noticing. That's a tradition. But I'm flabbergasted as anyone. But it's not just, well, I hear there's anti-Semitism on Columbia. No, it is out there. They are screaming it. And some of these kids are American. The ones that aren't got to be kicked right out. As I mentioned right before we brought in Dr. Nicole Sapphire, my daughter was in Australia for a semester. If I found out she was standing up and speaking out against the nation of Australia, their religion, their beliefs, the Aborigines, whatever was the hot issue then, I would, before she got kicked out, I would grab her home. What are you doing? You're a guest in that country. You're there to study. You're not there to demonstrate. But that doesn't bother a lot of people who believe they own the place when they come here as exchange students. They probably get incredible deals. And in a lot of places, they get financed by the government to come here and get their $80,000. And that's why these elite institutions take them. It's cash. And they got enough cash in the Ivy Leagues. But what about jobs after? And we heard about this from Ackerman. Was it Ken Ackerman, who is the CEO of that major investment firm? He says, anybody who wants to intern with me, if I see an Ivy League, if I see an Ivy League resume, I'm not even looking at it. Listen to Alex Carr, he's Plantier CEO, cut 21.
There were unfortunately way too many people on October 7th who were happy. And we have to acknowledge we have a huge problem in the Western world with anti-Semitism. And we cannot, not all criticism of Israel is anti-Semitism, but a larger portion of it is than we realized. And we have to call it out and I'm one of the largest donors to the Democratic Party, and quite frankly, I'm calling it out, and I'm giving to Republicans, if you keep up with this behavior, I'm going to change. A lot of people like me are going to change. We have to really call this out. It is completely beyond the bounds. That's before you get to the Israel thing.
Yeah, and then he went on. Cut 22.
Most Americans, again, most Americans who are not at elite institutions, see this battle for what it is. You see a one side, which is powered by terrorism, that is using terrorist means, and that will expand its footprint to the West if it's not pushed back. And I am not a legislator, but I am running one of the coolest companies in the world, and I'm telling young people, you are breathing the vapors of a dangerous, new, fake, and self-destructive religion when you are sitting at your elite school pretending because you watched TikTok twice and got an A-plus on some crazy paper because your professor couldn't get a job anywhere else, that you actually understand the world. And you're not welcome at my company.
That's exactly what's happening. Yeah, you can have your say now. You could act like a big tough guy on campus, and a president could be confused about how to handle a major sit-in, and the anti-Semitism might have caught your school by surprise. I hope caught him by surprise. But when it comes to the real world, there's going to be plenty of deliberation to fire before you hire someone, invest in them, especially in those coveted jobs that a lot of Ivy Leaguers expect to get once they graduate. And when they look at this and they're going to say, okay, 2024 graduate or 2023, graduated in 2026, were they part of the sit-ins? Were they part of the anti-Semitic behavior? Maybe I'm going to look at their website. Maybe I'm going to look at their social media. Maybe I'm going to look at other people's social media and see if they're on it. And maybe you're screwing up your whole career right now. You know what? If you are anti-Semitic, nobody wants you a part of their organization. No free-thinking person. You're going to have a lot of trouble in the real world. And this is the real world.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.